Monday night on the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Ailish Forfar, Justin Cuthbert. Huge weekend to unpack. We're going to get into the NFL a little later on with Mark Ross. 6:30-ish, Bills and Eagles, maybe the game of the season, unless you're a Bills fan. We're going to discuss some of the Shohei Ohtani Blue Jays rumors later in the show as well. The Oilers might be back. McDavid gets 9 points over two games, kind of willing them back into the conversation. Leafs are 0-2 since Sweden after losing to Dubas's Penguins on the weekend. We just saw moments ago, and I think Kipper helped break it on Real Kipper Born. Dean Evason fired from the Minnesota Wild. John Hines coming in replacement. We're going to have Merrick Monday in about 5 minutes to get his take on all of that. But let's start with some of the tidbits from Leafs land today. We heard from Brad Trey Living. We saw new lines. And I don't know if it was time for the new lines, but Mitch Marner's no longer up there.
No longer top line Mitch. Now second line Mitch. An interesting shuffle because it seemed like this is just when people started discussing it. Yeah. And all of a sudden, okay, snap your fingers. Because we know Sheldon Keefe's been reluctant to make changes, especially one, mm-hmm. not in game, but ones that are semi-permanent that involve Mitch Marner and Auston Matthews being split. It's something he hasn't wanted to do. But I think the thing that's most interesting to me when looking at these lines is that they split Tyler Bertuzzi and William Nylander.
The thing that was working.
And a fix. We've been talking about the second line forever, how they didn't have something that worked. Maybe Tyler Bertuzzi was the answer to that, mm-hmm. and immediately they decide to pull the plug. It's the best conditions they've created all year. 170 even strike minutes between the two when they're playing together. Winning 8-3 in goal differential. 65% expected goals with Bertuzzi and Nylander on the ice at even strength. And now we're not going to see it, at least to start the next game. So I was a little surprised to see those two split. I think you could easily have done Bertuzzi, Matthews, Nylander, and maybe you kept a good thing going.
Yeah, I feel like Bertuzzi was just kind of coming into his own too, right? A slower start, people were questioning where his hit would be, but they found it. Nylander also having a 17-game point streak helped a lot. But Marner, just 3 assists in his last 5 games. Matthews, just 2 points in the same amount, a goal and assist. There was clearly a lack of production, maybe some miscommunication, maybe a little bit of on the wrong page at times. But I will say, 4 out of the next 5 games are at home. That's kind of the time, if you're going to do experimentation, you get last change. You know, maybe things aren't working. You're throwing on lines here and there. What's Sheldon Keefe known for? The blender. Mm-hmm. So if you get a little bit of home ice over the next while, and they do have 4 out of the next 5, might be an okay time to do this. You're on a 2-game losing streak since Sweden. I don't think it's like cause for alarm. I think it was bound to happen, but the connection of when it just started and all the conversation is always funny in Leafs land. Like, we're calling for Marner to be off the top line, and hello, he is.
Very, very quickly, yeah, public pressure. I'm not sure if public pressure had an influence on this, but you're right. You could kind of see it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, for some reason, it wasn't working between Matthews and Marner to the extent that it had been. And I do wonder what percentage of it, that it wasn't working, had to do with whomever they were playing with, because we know it didn't work with Bertuzzi. And honestly, since Matthew Nyes was elevated to the top line, it hasn't exactly been fireworks between the three. So I guess there's some trust that Nyes and Matthews can have the sort of partnership that will result in 5-on-5 scoring. But I wonder if it wasn't Nyes who went up and if there was more stability or at least some consistency throughout or some familiarity with Matthews and Marner that they wouldn't be in this position, because it is a head scratcher why it hasn't worked between Matthews and Marner to the extent that it has. And really, if we're looking inward, or the Leafs are looking inward, mm-hmm. I mean, Mitch Marner hasn't been great the entire season. He's been fine. Sheldon Keefe came to his defense outlining the production mm-hmm. that's still there, but it's always there. You know when it's right and when it's not right with Mitch Marner. And to start this season, he just hasn't looked like the same player who was, for long stretches last year, unstoppable. Mm-hmm. It just hasn't been like that for Mitch Marner this year at all.
Yeah, it was interesting. Sheldon Keefe was asked about this, I believe, after their loss on Saturday or the practices before that, which would have been today, about Mitch Marner and the connection from the reporters. And he said, well, who leads our team in 5-on-5 and even strength points? And it's Mitch Marner, but it hasn't felt that way. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's because when Mitch Marner was on last year, he was the most noticeable player on the ice. He was playing with that confidence. He was, as you said, like unstoppable. This year, it's all William Nylander. He has been the best player on the Maple Leafs, including Auston Matthews, who was a guy that has led this team for quite a while. So it feels like a different look. I think the players spoke about it post-practice today, and they seem like they're encouraged by it. Whatever, it's no big deal. It's, what, 15 games into the season?
Better not be.
It better not be a big deal. You're right. But this is an important stretch. The Maple Leafs, and we were going to get into this a little later, but they only have five regulation wins this season. Five. Like, that is, they're pretty lucky to be where they are with only five regulation wins. They've been able to pull out some overtime, some shootout wins. But there's few teams with less than five regulation wins, and some of the teams that do have more than five regulation wins are in last place. Columbus, last in the Metro. Sens are dead last in the Atlantic. They've got six regulation wins, three less games played than Toronto as well. And the Oilers, of course, we've talked about the Oilers quite a lot. They have more regulation wins than the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, and for that reason, it's easy to see why some change is in order. It just hasn't been a clean start. And I guess that's partially the reason why Brad Treliving came out and spoke to the media today, because it wasn't just about John Klingberg. It wasn't just about the decision to split Matthews and Marner. There's an overall blanket statement that sort of needs to be made about this team, but I guess needs to be answered. It made some sense to have Brad Treliving come out today, because there's reason to question and to wonder about this start, and I think he shares in some of the struggles they've had to this point in the season. Okay, so we teased Merrick Monday. We should get to Merrick Monday, and we should start Merrick with the Minnesota Wild, who just made a coaching change in the last few hours here. Where did it go wrong with Dean Evason, and are you surprised? Oh. There he is, live
Look
from the
at
rink.
You.
Are you surprised that Dean Evason is wearing, or has to wear, the struggles of the Minnesota Wild to start this year?
I'll tell you what, this is something that Bill Guerin did not want to do. Like, not for 1 second do I believe that Bill Guerin wanted to fire Dean Evason. He's a Dean Evason guy. You know, normally we're used to Bill Guerin saying, okay, I'm going to make my decision quick, and I'm going to make it, and that's going to be it, and that's going to be final. But what we saw with Bill Guerin is he really took his time here, because, you know, I don't think he wanted a situation like the Edmonton Oilers just went through, where there was no decision to be made other than we need to get rid of the coach because we're not making trades right now. But that's a situation that Bill Guerin found himself in. Now, look, your team goes, you have 13 losses in 16 games. They've lost seven games in a row. Something had to change with the Minnesota Wild. And the way that they lost to the Detroit Red Wings yesterday afternoon, I'm not sure if you watched the game, but afterwards, you saw players like Patrick Maroon piping off about how everyone should be embarrassed about how they played. It's been a tough slog. Like, their penalty kill is the worst in the NHL. You have a look. Kirill Kaprizov has not looked like the dynamic superstar that we've seen previous. They've had a really hard time finding chemistry. I know the goaltending isn't where they want it to be and hasn't been all season long. There's a litany of reasons why it hasn't worked. And as much as, you know, Bill Guerin, general manager of the Wild, wanted to make trades and have a different outcome here, it became apparent that there was only really one move to make, and that was the dismissal of the coach. In comes John Hines, by the way, according to Mike Russo, who covers his team for the Minnesota, for the Athletic.
Yeah, its theme was always, maybe not this was always certain, but at a certain point, you can't overcome the salary obstacles that Minnesota accepted for itself by buying out Parise and Suter those years ago. So it feels like it's already a hand that you really have to overstretch in order to get the best out of. But you're right. Now it falls on John Hines. What do we know about John Hines? This will be his third stop in the NHL. He hasn't had an immense amount of success, but there have been pockets where he's been successful. Is he the right guy for this job, Merrick?
You know what's interesting about John Hines is if you look at, there's one player that I look at specifically and say, John Hines really got the most out of this player, and that's Taylor Hall. If you look at what John Hines was able to do with Taylor Hall in New Jersey, he turned him into, because let's not forget too, coming out of the Edmonton situation with Taylor Hall, there were a lot of question marks about how good is Taylor Hall, can Taylor Hall, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Hines got the most out of him and won the Hart Trophy, the best season Taylor Hall has ever had. Now, for various reasons in New Jersey, it didn't work. For other reasons in Nashville, it didn't work. So I know that there is that sort of background there, and there'll be a lot of people that are questioning the hiring of John Hines. Oh, here we go again. Hiring, so it's the recycling factory with the NHL. We've seen this movie before. Ask anyone who's played for him. There's a really good coach there. Ask anyone who's ever been around John Hines. There's a really good coach there. And also, let's not forget, too, the Minnesota Wild and their owner, Craig Leopold, very big USA Hockey people, so it shouldn't surprise us at all. Like, remember when all the chants were going on about Lane Lambert with the New York Islanders? It was a fire Lambert we were hearing at the UBS. One of the names that popped up quickly was John Hines, mainly because, well, he's a good coach, but secondly, there's a USA Hockey Association, you know, conjunction there. So it shouldn't surprise us that they go with a strong U.S., someone with a strong USA Hockey background here.
We're chatting to Jeff Merrick on Merrick Mondays live from my rink in possibly Stouffville, looking familiar.
Speaking of hockey Ajax, backgrounds.
No.
I'm in Ajax. I just realized that I didn't do a very good job with my own makeup.
You're blurry enough. Don't you worry. All right. So we were just chatting about the Maple Leafs top line and the decisions to split up Matthews and Marner. But in the wake of that, moving a really great pair of Bertuzzi and Nylander that were working extremely well. Was it time for this? Just a quick mix-up that needed to happen to spark some chemistry?
You know, I really, there's a couple of things that I believe about lines during the regular season. One, you know, when you find a good one, the tendency is, yeah, you want to keep it together because you want to have it successful. You know, I kind of fly in the face of that in some ways, and I know some coaches think this way too. And I know right now the Maple Leafs are trying to spark some new chemistry, but I firmly believe that, you know, if you're having, if you have any intention of having a sort of deep playoff run or do anything in the playoffs, injuries are going to become a reality. And if you're only used to playing with two other players because you played that way the entire season, that can really hurt you come playoff time. So I don't know whether that's part of this motivation at all, but I never think it's a bad idea that over the course of 82 games, you don't just stick with your set troikas, that you mix it up every now and then as well. Not sure that's the motivation here, but I do think it's a sidebar to all of it. I do think the Maple Leafs will be better off the more that they do this, if you're planning on having an extended playoff run, as the Maple Leafs are.
They're probably going to be better off here with clarity involving John Klingberg. We learned some things about the injury today. Brad Treliving stating that it did happen during a game. It wasn't something that was pre-existing. Maybe it was, you know, exacerbated some way, but not really sure. But we do know it happened during the season. Medical advice is on the way. But for you, does this change anything about what the plans were? Like, I think the Leafs are always going to be, and he acknowledged this, Brad Treliving said, hey, we're going to go try and get a defenseman. But does the Klingberg injury really change anything for you? Help is needed, and they're going to try and get it.
Opens up some cap space. I mean, I think that we're all on the same page, right, Justin Ailes? Like, the one thing that Brad Treliving, well, if you look historically at Brad Treliving, whenever he makes deals, he grabs defensemen. So the Maple Leafs are going to make any kind of deals, you can expect some defensemen to come and go look at the track record of Brad Treliving. That's generally what happens here. But I don't think it's any secret that Brad Treliving, you know, wants to change the look of this blue line. I think you look at it now and then you look at it come trade deadline time, it's going to look profoundly different. So I don't think it's just one defenseman he's looking at. It's probably more than one. And I really do wonder, honestly, if he's having, you know, having a thought about the net minding with Toronto. You know, you look at, and again, you can look at the Calgary Flames and you can say one massive trade could satisfy everything that the Leafs need. Not so sure that that's going to be there, but we'll see. But I really do wonder if he's looking not just for one blue liner, but a couple, and also maybe having a second thought about how he feels about his net.
So over the weekend, McDavid goes from 79th in league scoring to 13th in 48 hours, 9 points in two games. Maybe the Oilers are red hot, two-game winning streak. You think he's just angry enough to will this team back into the conversation?
If there's anyone that can do it, it's Connor McDavid, right? And I learned a long time ago, don't bet against the Tampa Bay Lightning and don't bet against Connor McDavid. Like, if there's, now, it does help that there's a lot of players in that mushy middle, or a lot of teams in that mushy middle in the Western Conference. And as one person texted me yesterday, it's a good thing that the Oilers play in the Western Conference and not the Eastern Conference, because they can make up ground really quickly here. Listen, if there's one player that can do it, if there's one player that can will his team into a playoff position and maybe even do some damage when they get there, it's Connor McDavid. And they look profoundly different. The game against Washington was one thing, and then I know Anaheim's had a dip here, but they just looked like world beaters against Anaheim last night. I felt bad for poor Lucas Dostal, who must have felt like a shooter-tooter the way they were picking apart corners on Dostal yesterday. Also felt bad for Max Jones, by the way. He scores two goals in the first period. He's on his way to having the best game ever in his NHL career. And it gets scotched by the Edmonton Oilers. Felt bad for Max Jones. But if there's anyone that can do it, it's Connor McDavid. And the fact that there's a lot of teams that really don't know which direction they're going to go, Ailish, in the Western Conference, maybe this is a perfect storm for the Edmonton Oilers right now.
Pretty good Monday night hockey doubleheader. We got the Kachuk Bowl, and follow that, Vegas at Calgary. But I do want to zero in on the Kachucks here. Just a reminder today, looking at Matthew Kachuk's profile, not yet 26 years old. Of course, Brady's 2 years younger. These guys are still young men with a lot of career ahead of them. And I was wondering, before I looked at that, are these fully formed guys? Like, is this the Brady Tkachuk that we're going to see for the next 10 years? Is this the Matthew Tkachuk that we're going to see for another 10 years? With Brady especially, a lot of room to grow, only 24 years old. Where do you think Brady Tkachuk's going? Where do you think Brady Tkachuk ends up? We've talked about Sid and Ovi, maybe one outlasting the other, Sid looking so good. What do you think prime Brady Tkachuk is going to look like, Merrick?
Like one of the best power forwards in the NHL. Like, I think you'll look at him and you'll say, yeah, you know what, this guy, you know, you go back and redraft, and we all love Rasmus Dahlin and, you know, Andrei Svechnikov, but you go back and you redo that draft. I know Dahlin is awesome, but, man, do you not have a look at Brady Tkachuk in that top spot? Like, I think we're looking at two of the premier power forwards in the NHL, and you're looking at two players that grew up in a hockey household, that grew up understanding everything about the game of hockey, whether it's the protocols in the hotel and the protocols in the rink and how to behave. And I'll tell you what, I'll still go back to that moment where everybody in Ottawa was, you know, howling for the dismissal of DJ Smith and Brady Tkachuk. And this was very deliberate. And this comes right from his dad, who taught the kids this going way back. It's like he just dove on the grenade and said, you know what? No, I'm going to make this about myself and get all the heat off of DJ Smith. And essentially, without saying it, told everybody in Ottawa to pipe down that DJ Smith is our guy. Like, unless you're immersed in hockey your whole life, you don't know instinctively to do that. Brady Tkachuk does. Like, I'm with you, Justin. I still think this guy has a lot of room to grow. Just like I think the Ottawa Senators have a lot of room to grow. Like, I know that, you know, under Pierre Dorion, we kept hearing, oh, we're close. They're getting closer. But there's still a lot of growing to do here for the Ottawa Senators, and I think a lot of it is going to be led, with all due respect to Tim Stützle, probably the most skilled player on the team. I think the whole thing is being led by Brady Tkachuk, and he's going to go down in this generation probably as one of the best captains in the NHL. As far as Matthew Tkachuk goes, like, he's a star off the ice. He's a stud on the ice. Like, if he didn't leave Calgary, he was going to be the next captain of that team. They haven't recovered from losing Matthew Tkachuk. He makes everybody around him better. He makes the team better. And he's a star off the ice, too. He's one of the most marketable players in the game, hands down. I know I sound like I'm their agent, but I can't say enough about these two. I just love the Tkachuk family and what both of them bring on the ice. And, like, they're skilled, they're tough, they're smart, they're personable, they're charming. They're everything you want in a hockey player, aren't they?
Yeah, forget the Kelsey brothers. I'm all over the Tkachuk brothers. You know, they should have their own podcast. Like, you know, I think that they could make a run for best brother.
They got a big spot on Monday Night Hockey. We'll
there
start with
go.
That.
A big spot. Let's ask you about Patrick Kane. Is he nearing a decision? Yeah. What's the timeline on that? And in terms of what he can actually bring to a team, what do you think that his impact will be when he does decide?
Well, I think a lot of it depends on, you know, where he's going to end up here. And it seems like, you know, the winds are blowing Detroit's direction on this. Listen, there's been a lot of teams that have been interested. The Florida Panthers have been very aggressive trying to bring in Patrick Kane. That's going to be tough considering how up against the salary cap they are. The Dallas Stars showed interest last year. The Dallas Stars showed some interest this year as well. But, you know, they have two players in Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn that both had similar surgeries, and it took them 2 years to get back to playing the way that they're expected to play. So I think that's caused, you know, the Dallas Stars to go a little bit cold on this. Elliot reported on the last podcast that came out this morning that the Boston Bruins may have come in late on this one as well, that there was some interest there. We've all wondered about the Buffalo Sabres for the obvious reason. He's a Buffalo guy. The Toronto Maple Leafs, I can only see that. Like, I could only see that happening if it was part of a bigger, like, Brad Treliving deal around it, but not just as a one-off. To try to worm Patrick Kane in on the Toronto Maple Leafs. To me and a lot of other people, the whole thing sort of revolves around the Detroit Red Wings. Elliot reported on the weekend that, and in his blog last week, that Patrick Kane did a lot of research on the Detroit Red Wings. And here's the tip off. It's been really, really quiet around Patrick Kane. It's been really, really silent. And that is usually an indication of the Islanders' involvement, because we all know about Lou Lamoriello. Or if you look at who is considered Lou Lamoriello light, or the new Lou, or Lou number two, that's Steve Yzerman. Nothing leaks out as well. I think we're all wondering at this point if at the end of it, and we do expect the decision relatively soon, whatever that means. if I'm betting, or if I'm throwing a dart, it's landing in Detroit with the Detroit Red Wings.
Last one for you, Merrick, before we get back to or let you get back to that high tempo practice going on behind. we saw Travis Dermott a couple weeks ago challenge the NHL. Marc-Andre Fleury did the same thing over the weekend. Those instances, Dermott and Flower doing what the NHL told them they couldn't. What has that taught us about the NHL?
That they still have a lot to do on this one. That this isn't solved by any stretch of the imagination. That this was a poorly thought out idea. The execution has been poor. The follow up has been poor. And they still have a problem. Because it's one thing for Travis Dermott to wear pride tape. It's another thing for, you know, Bobrovsky and Grubauer to wear their Hockey Fights cancer masks. It's another for Marc-Andre Fleury to wear his First Nations mask in the game against the Avalanche, the pregame on Friday. You know, I'm saying this to Elliot on the podcast. There's an election in the U.S. coming up, and it's going to be a real hot one. And we don't know how athletes are going to react. We don't know how athletes are going to stand up for their candidates. But right now, the world is on fire. There's an election that's going to set the United States metaphorically on fire as well. I think a lot of sports leagues are concerned about that. And what the NHL now has set up is they establish a rule for what you can and cannot wear, but there are no consequences if you break that rule. That, to me, says there's still a lot of work to be done on this. It hasn't been handled well from the get-go. The players want it the way that Marc-Andre Fleury and Bobrovsky and Travis Dermott have demonstrated. The fans want it that way as well. That's why I think this policy still needs some work from the NHL. And I'll tell you another thing, guys. Where's the NHL Players Association on this? Like, originally, the NHLPA wanted to work with the NHL to try to help give them a soft landing and try to, you know, make this palatable for everybody. But right now, it ain't working. And it still needs, like, there should never have been a controversy about Marc-Andre Fleury wearing that mask. There should never have been a controversy about Travis Dermott. There should never be a controversy about goaltenders wearing their Hockey Fights cancer mask. The fact that we're still talking about this as December is on the horizon, to me, says that this whole thing still needs a lot more work than it's been given, a lot more attention.
Well said, Merrick. We appreciate your time today and every Monday. Get out there and show those kids what's up.
They're way, these are 12-year-olds, and they're like way better than I ever was or am now. This is like, I'm nowhere even close to the skill level of these kids. Here, you can go out on this one. I'll show you some of the
skills.
There
skiing. We go.
Oh yeah.
There's my kid at the far end here. What are you going to do, buddy?
Looking good.
Next time we'll be paying for this broadcast right here.
Keep your stick on the ice, kiddo. All right, Merrick. Thanks so much. We'll chat soon.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. That's Jeff Merrick of 32 Thoughts, the podcast, and the Jeff Merrick Show. That's his young son ripping around in Ajax out on the ice. Okay, let's get right into Bet Rivers. Time now for Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. You're going to go first this time.
Yeah, I'm going with the Kachuk brothers. I don't have any interest in any more Kelce Bowls. We may see one in the Super Bowl again, but my interest is in the Kachuk Bowl tonight. And I think these guys are having interesting scoring seasons for different reasons. Mm. Brady Kachuk only scores in bunches. If he has a goal, he's got two. He's got five games where he scored. He's got two goals in each of those five games. So only multi-goal games for Brady Kachuk. On the flip side, Matthew Kachuk is shooting 3.5% on the season. He's fifth in the NHL in shots. He's scoring on 3.5% of those shots. That is just telling me he's going to fill the net over the next couple months here, because positive regression is almost guaranteed when you're shooting 3.5%. So I'm going with the aggressive play of it's got to happen sometime for Matthew, and it only happens in twos for Brady. Mm-hmm. Both to score two goals. Plus 5,500. 55-1 for the Kachuk bros to both go off. It really is the Kachuk Bowl tonight. They'll both score twice. We'll cash in. And for the more conservative play, Panthers puck line plus 190. I kind of like that.
Okay, mine is brothers related, but it's actually sons related. It's the sons parlay and Addison and Hawkinson touchdown parlayed together. I think the Minnesota Vikings run the league in sons, Madison, Hawkinson, Addison, Jefferson. So I'm going to give you two sons, plus 900 for them both to get a touchdown tonight.
Okay. That's fair. Brothers and sons. Let's go.
Brothers and sons. The sun will be shining tonight on the Minnesota Vikings to win. Okay. That was Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. Mark Ross will keep our NFL discussion going after the break. We'll be back on the Fan Pregame with Ailish and Justin.
diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan pregame, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet, Justin Cuthbert and Ailish Forfar. Big day yesterday in the NFL. That was a great game, the Eagles and the Bills.
It was. How are you feeling about it?
Unfortunately, it ended in a way that my fandom was not impressed about, but it was a great, it felt like the longest football game I've ever watched also. I think it was like 4 hours long.
It was really long. It was really, really long. Yeah. So you're a big Bills fan. Mm. Obviously, the season's been frustrating. But has it been, like, more frustrating than previous seasons?
Yes.
Like, last year was weird. Then there's the excruciating losses in the playoffs. Like, this is the worst of the experiences
so
regarding
like
the Bills?
It really does. Maybe it's just...
And why is that? Just because they're, like, they're not reaching potential?
Yeah.
They're throwing away opportunities?
They're throwing away opportunities.
Okay.
They're losing games that they really had in the palm of their hand. That's what's frustrating.
And it feels like...
And it feels like there's a lot of opportunity in the AFC's, like, to be the team.
Definitely. And they've got a really hard schedule, so maybe the opportunity will pass them by, not to, you know, put anything out in the universe for you. But the Philadelphia Eagles seem like the opposite, where they have this unbelievably hard schedule as well.
And
yet they're passing all these tests. But it felt like the Chiefs gave it away, and it felt like the Bills gave it to them. Mm-hmm. So now I'm not even sure about the Philadelphia Eagles, despite them having this amazing record.
They're almost like floating by.
I'm just saying they're not as good as their record, and Buffalo's not as bad as their record. That's probably not a hot take, but that just feels like the reality. Anyway, to discuss the NFL Week 12 and more, Mark Ross of the NFL Network joins us. What's going on, Mark?
Hey, how you doing?
We are doing pretty good. Let's start with Philadelphia, because they really are the talk of the NFL right now. Jalen Hurts, maybe the MVP front runner. They've got this ridiculously difficult schedule, but they've passed pretty much every test. Are we seeing their brilliance here in this little run? Or are we seeing sort of cracks where, yeah, they needed some luck and some circumstance to get past Kansas City, and maybe the same thing to a lesser extent versus the Buffalo Bills?
Well, first of all, you win 10 games, you're 10-1. It's, you know, you're good. You know how to win. You win games, that's a skill. And that's something that I heard you guys talking about the Bills. And, you know, I'm sure the Bills would take some of that luck or whatever, but when you learn how to win, that is something that is to be applauded. And I live in Philadelphia. I'm a Philadelphia native and Eagles fans. I mean, you can win right after the Super Bowl. They're like, why didn't win by 20 points? You know, that's just the nature of fandom, is you want to blow people out, but winning close games is a skill and something that you have to do, especially against the best teams. I mean, two back-to-back primetime games against the Kansas City Chiefs and the Buffalo Bills, and they win both games. You know, we should be talking about this team that is amazing, not, well, they needed to play here and to play there. Well, yeah, I got two Super Bowl rings because we had a play here and a play there. A guy catch something off his helmet, but I'm not giving that back. And I don't think any other team, when you go and look at big games or Super Bowls, there's a play here or a play there that turn games. And that's just the nature of playoff games and Super Bowl games and big-time games. So the Eagles, they get in these games no matter who they play, and doesn't matter how they look, and Jalen Hurts goes and says, let's go win this game, and that's what they do. And until they're proven otherwise and they start losing or put together two or three losses, you know, that's just something that should be applauded.
Is it going Chiefs, Bills, and now 49ers and Cowboys next? Those will be close games. We can almost guarantee that. Maybe they win both. Yeah. Maybe they lose both. They're still going to be reckoned with in the NFC and when we get to the playoffs. But when you look at the 49ers and Cowboys and who's prepared more or more equipped to prepare a challenge for the Philadelphia Eagles when it matters the most, who you got? Who do you believe in more right now, the 49ers or the Cowboys?
The 49ers. You know, with the Cowboys, it's, you know, they're the opposite of Philly, where no one can blow out bad teams like the Cowboys. I mean, they're the biggest front runner going. I've been saying about them all year. And, you know, every time they blow out one of these bad teams, I mean, if you look at the teams that they beat this year, they all got losing records, you know, by a substantial margin. And, you know, you take those guys no matter what. Now it's until they beat good teams or
a high-quality opponent, playoff games. You know, Dak Prescott, I'm looking at you. But until they do that, then they I won't believe in them. Now, San Francisco's won some tight games. They've won playoff games. They've done that. Their concern with me is Brock Purdy and how he got exposed this year when he needs all his components. Now, and that's that San Francisco team where during that stretch when Debo was out and, you know, where he looked like, yep, we can expose this team if he doesn't have everything going. But that being said, I still kind of just trust San Fran more than Dallas to give the Eagles a run.
Mark, let's go to the Buffalo Bills. We were just mentioning them before we had you on, of course. Josh Allen's put them in a winning position inside 2 minutes four times this season, and they're 0-4 in those games. Why do they keep losing tight games? Is that on coaching? Is that a bit of a mix of personnel and play systems?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both, but, you know, you're a Bills fan, so you've seen this over the last two or three years with, you know, the head coach. It goes back to him, and he's made some other coaches there the scapegoats and said, well, you know, it was Leslie Frazier's fault or it was Rick Dennison's fault. Or, well, now it's all on Sean. And you know, Sean was my intern way back in the day in Philly, so known Sean a long time. But and he did a tremendous job in getting that organization right and stable and whatever he had to do with Josh ascending to the heights that he's ascended to. But when something becomes consistent, and I talked about the Eagles knowing how to win and consistently win, and it's something with the Bills where you can one off each time they get into these games and say, well, it was just that play. Okay, well, now the next game. Well, it was just that. Well, once you keep having these consistent excuses for why they lose, that goes to that's just the nature and the makeup and the DNA of that team. And yeah, that goes to the coaching. I think they also are a flawed team with their personnel. I think they were a little bit overrated with kind of, you know, their defensive stars or their safeties are really old. And you saw Hyde on that play in the end zone where it looked like, wow, you know, but the key is catch there. Von Miller hasn't done what they wanted him to do. He looks like he doesn't have much left. So, you know, on offense, you know, outside of Diggs, you know, Kincaid's coming on a little bit. Gabe Davis is up and down. So, you know, up and down a little bit with the talent, but also, yes, the coaching trend of finding a way to lose, you know, that kind of has to go on to Sean now.
Well, it's okay. They only play the Chiefs and the Cowboys in their next two opponents, so everything
well,
should be fine.
Get right.
and
that's the thing. They still have a chance. You know, they still can get in, and they'll still be dangerous, as they showed last night. And it's just, when are they going to do that? And they just have to start doing it. Mm-hmm. And they have it right in front of their hands right now.
Yes, time is ticking. So you're a former executive. So I wonder your perspective on the outside noise during coaching changes, not necessarily related to the Bills, just in general. I mean, we saw a coach fired today. But how much do execs hear or listen or even notice public outcry for changes? Like Pittsburgh firing Matt Canada, for example, the other day after fans were screaming for it for months. Is there like 5% that there's even a, you know, maybe we should listen or we hear this and it influences, or is that just the 0%, nothing ever impacts a decision like that?
I mean, you're aware of it for sure. You definitely know what's going on. You have to be cognizant of the media, the fans, and all that. You can't let that dictate your decisions. You know, that's the difference between some teams and others where, you know, let's just say the draft. Oh, you know, they want this guy. We got to draft him or this free agent. We got to do that. No, you have to have a plan. You have to stick with your plan. The best teams all are on the same page as far as this is our plan. We're going to talk this out, work this out together with the head coach, GM, ownership group, you know, the key personnel people there and have your plan and execute it and not let the outside noise affect what you do as an organization. You know, I learned that as a young scout. My second draft in the NFL I was with the Eagles when we took Donovan McNabb. Absolutely loved Donovan McNabb, you know, at that time. I'm just a 24-year-old scout and I don't know if you guys remember the whole city of Philadelphia wanted Ricky Williams and booing us and the whole deal and booed Donovan on draft day and all leading up to it. I was like, screw these people. You know, inside the building, it was like, Donovan's our guy. We all got to stick together in this. And that's what teams really have to do when they make decisions, is just stick to the plan of how you plan things in your building, not from the outside noise.
I don't know if we can call it a renaissance, but Russell Wilson and Sean Payton are suddenly working together and combining on something that could be pretty special. Five straight wins. Wilson is not being asked to do everything, but 20 touchdowns to four interceptions, dominant over the last five games, setting up maybe the game of the weekend aside from the major headliners, like maybe the low-key game of the weekend is Texans-Broncos. Like, do you think this is real, what's going on with Russell Wilson and Sean Payton? Do they have each other to thank for their re-relevance, if you want to call it that? Like, what's going on in Denver? Is this real?
Yeah, you said use the word special. I don't think it's special what's happening there. I think they're doing well. I mean, Russell was 13-22 and threw for 134 yards in that win yesterday. So, you know, when you watch them play, it's like, you know, there's a lot of bad teams playing a lot of bad teams in the NFL. Denver did win a couple good ones, you know, get some quality teams early in that win streak. When they beat the Chiefs, certainly. Bills, we don't know, up and down. But, you know, you got to give them credit for winning the games that they've won and certainly look a lot better than what they did early in the season. But, you know, they still have some tough tests ahead of them. But, yeah, Russell isn't lighting it up. You know, they're just playing competent. They're doing enough. They're making plays when they need to. And most importantly, their turnover differential over this win streak is incredible. I think they're plus 13 or so in the turnovers. So winning the turnover. So that, I think that's really the key to how they're winning. But overall, they'll take it. They'll take those six wins right now and see how they do down the stretch.
It's funny because we've been talking about or leading the interview with a lot of the elite teams, right? Talking about Philly and the Chiefs and where Buffalo belongs and that all these teams are bouncing off each other, playing each other in the stretch of the season. And you mentioned, you know, Denver beating up on bad teams. And we heard the word mediocrity from Tom Brady, and you kind of alluded to it there. Like, is there enough quality football in the NFL right now? And like you said, yeah, it's not special what Russell Wilson and Sean Payton are doing, but five straight wins in the NFL is difficult, especially when you start how you did. Is that just a factor of, hey, there's a lot of bad teams in the NFL right now, and if the good teams are playing each other, well, it's going to make other results look a little bit better or worse than they really are.
Yeah, it's just, I think a lot of it's kind of smoke and mirrors. I mean, Pittsburgh is 7-4. Has anyone watched the Pittsburgh Steelers game and said that team is even okay?
Negative 23 point differential, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, and they're 7-4, and it's incredible. Cleveland is 7-4. You know, with three different starting quarterbacks, and it's a struggle every week. But when all of these teams are playing each other, someone's got to win them. So, you know, when you get to that point of that, okay, what's the difference making? You know, coaching is a big factor. The turnovers, as I said. But, you know, you really have to look at the landscape of who can win the Super Bowl. You know, when I look at things, I judge everything off of who can win the Super Bowl, who can make a run, not just who can get in. And because that's being a part of organizations and building teams and winning two Super Bowls, being in, you know, four NFC championship games that, you know, with the Eagles, it was all about not just getting in or being relevant. It was about winning the whole thing. And really just when you look at the landscape of who can actually win the whole thing, you know, there's four teams possibly that could do it, and then you're just looking at a whole lot of other teams that'll be in. You know, of course, we got to fill out the playoff, the seven slots in the playoffs, but are you really looking at whoever wins the NFC South and feel that they can really do anything, or, you know, they're just, someone has to win that division? And, you know, are we really looking at, you know, the wild card teams at the bottom there, whether it's the Steelers, Browns, Colts? You know, Colts are 6-5, but are we looking at those teams like they really have a shot, or is it just, you know, it's on the schedule? And I work for the network. I do the Game Day Live every week, me and the host, and we you know, joke about the quality of play that goes on and or lack thereof each week. But it's been entertaining, and they've been down to the wire. A lot of games have been down the wire. So that's what we really want, is those competitive games, and the quality play will take care of itself.
Well, if you're talking about lack of quality, how about the Panthers? 1-10, firing their coach today. Another coach that's 2-2 seasons. Who's going to want to go in there and try to fix something? A short leash, rookie quarterback hasn't shown many positive flashes. They don't have their first-round draft pick this year. They're 1-10. Doesn't seem like a very appetizing team to walk in and try to make an NFL head coaching debut or return.
Yeah, you know, through every coaching cycle,
you know, we get those teams that no one wants that job. And you know what? There's people beating down the door to take those jobs. And because there's only 32, but in reality, whatever that cycle is, there's only six. There's only seven. So in the whole entire world, there's only six of these jobs. Oh, and by the way, they're not bad with the salaries that they're with it. And then every coach feels like they can make a difference. They can make a change despite all of those negative aspects you mentioned with whatever team is. Yes, Carolina's got all of those, but a coach is going to go in there and say, you know what, I can overcome this. And that's how you'll have to sell it to get the job. So, you know, I've been around a lot of great coaches, and they all have that mentality of just overcoming. It's like preparing for a game. Like, okay, we may be shorthanded or they're better than us, but we're going in expecting to win. So there's going to be tons of people that want to go in to that Carolina job and say, Bryce Young is going to be a star, and we can get some guys in free agency. We're going to draft well, and we're going to make this work. And, you know, by the way, Matt Rhule got fired with $40 million left on his contract, and Frank Reich's got $30 million left on his contract. So you show me one person that won't take that and sit on the beach for the rest of their life, I'd love to see them, because that's very appealing to me.
Yeah, maybe less of an investment this time for Carolina. I'm not sure they can get away with that, but I don't know if they want to add another $40 million on top of the pile of money being spent to fund vacations. Last one for you, Mark, and we might be pulling from the mediocre pool once again, but the Minnesota Vikings can improve to 7-5 here with a win over the Chicago Bears Monday Night Football, and they're going to get Justin Jefferson back here soon. Are they set up for anything? Like, it looks like they can really solidify their playoff positioning, but make a run. Is there enough there with Josh Dobbs and Jefferson, that partnership we haven't seen yet? But the Vikings in a good spot if they can get a win tonight.
Oh, yeah. And again, you look, it's an incredible story with Josh Dobbs. And, you know, he's the hot name. Why can't you just get a Josh Dobbs with all these other teams? Well, because seven other teams passed on Josh Dobbs. You know, he didn't show these flashes now. Now, there's plenty of season left to see where he is in his career. I mean, he just played this year. You know, he just played all those games with the Cardinals and was a little bit up and down and showed a lot of this of what he's showing now. It was just hidden in Arizona. But he was also flawed as well. But that being said, he's given them some spark. He's given them some energy. You see the playmaking that he has. Jordan Addison, the rookie, has been spectacular in Justin Jefferson's absence. So that'll be really fun to see those two guys together on the field. And, yes, when you're looking at them, yes, they're super flawed. But then you look at, oh, they're playing Chicago tonight. They're going to beat Chicago, a bad team. So it's that's just the way you have to look at it. And they'll take the win. They're positioned really well to make the playoffs. You win the division, make the playoffs. You know, I don't know if Detroit will falter just because, but they're in a really good spot to get in, and they'll take it and could pull off an upset or two. You know, win the whole thing, no, but yeah, definitely enough there to get in and have a surprise.
Mark, any comments on Dartmouth sharing the Ivy League title this year, not with Princeton? Just wanted to give you an opportunity to air your grievances.
It was a down year for us this year, but that's all right. I got faith in the Coastal race there and his recruiting prowess, and we'll go back and win it next year. You know, it's hard to win back-to-back-to-back win every year. So, you know, we had three in the – are you a Dartmouth grad?
I am. I had to bring it up.
Oh, boy. Oh, well.
Okay, can you two explain something to me? Is it you guys share the title every year? You shared last year. You guys just have a championship game. Why isn't there a championship game?
It's the craziest. I mean, we have some crazy roles here where, yeah, you can – Dartmouth could beat – they beat us, but we share it because we have the same record instead of the head-to-head. There's no tiebreakers in the Ivy League. So
just have a championship
last year, there was a scenario where four teams could have shared the championship in the Ivy League, and there's only eight teams. Yeah, so
we're really into unity and community.
You're supposed to be smart.
it's incredible.
we will recircle next season about who will take the Ivy League title. But I had to get my shot in there while I could. You know,
this hoop season is coming up. We didn't make the Sweet 16.
Get ready
last
for a 6-way tie.
We're definitely not a strong basketball school this time around, so we'll let you have that one, all right? Well, we appreciate your time tonight, Mark. Sure, have a great night. We'll chat soon.
Okay.
Thanks
all
so
right.
much.
My pleasure.
Mark Ross of NFL Network, former Princeton Tiger.
What is it? Is there some sort of study that, like, this is the amount of football we can play in a season?
I think it's just just the way that it went forever, and they've never changed it.
Okay. Tradition.
How'd your Western Mustangs do this year?
I'm just saying. Oh, they play towards the Vanier Cup every year.
And then how'd they do this year?
I'm not sure. I don't bleed purple like you bleed green.
You had to be from Quebec to win a football title in the last month, I guess.
Well, who else? We got Montreal.
That is Quebec.
There you go.
Good work, Justin. Need to go to an Ivy League school to know Montreal's in Quebec.
Too many championship games, I guess.
All right, we got about 5 minutes here. Let's get into some of the Ohtani mumblings and rumblings. I just can't wait till he signs somewhere, I got to say that. But in the meantime, let's get back into, Blue Jays are sleepers or dark horses, whatever.
Well, let's answer that question first. You want to be if you're a Blue Jays fan.
Because we're using both words right now.
Because they've been called sleeper and dark horse. Do you want to be sleeper or do you want to be dark horse?
I want to be a dark horse versus a sleeper because a dark horse feels like it has like the momentum to actually do something. Sleeper is like, nah, anyone can be a sleeper.
I think that's right.
There's momentum in dark horse.
I think it's harder to earn the title of dark horse.
100%.
You want to be the dark horse.
100%. So anyway, Ben Nicholson-Smith does use the word dark horse, so that's encouraging. So in his latest Blue Jays notebook up on sportsnet.ca, how could teams get creative in recruiting Ohtani? He mentioned that if the Blue Jays, a dark horse suitor for Ohtani, uses those words, have been personally crafted a recruitment pitch video, as they'd done previously for someone like Yusei Kikuchi, then they're probably getting ready for some things of that sort. But with in mind, he added a few add-on things that Blue Jays could consider when they make their pitch. An informal agreement that gives Ohtani input into coaching staff decisions.
Okay.
A lucrative side deal for trusted staff, such as like an interpreter.
So he brings in his guys. Yeah. I mean, he'd probably appreciate that.
The right to leave. A guarantee that Ohtani plays for a winner. So if things aren't going well, an opt-out clause.
If
they go two consecutive seasons under 500. That he could opt out or something.
Now, I don't know the CBA by the back of my hand, but like you can't do that in the NHL.
No, not in the NHL.
But if you could do that in baseball, I mean.
There's some creative ways, is Ben Nicholson-Smith's article, check it up on sportsnet.ca, that mentions some ways that they could get sneaky.
Okay, so I look at those things like, yeah, he could pick the coach. If he wants to pick the manager, go ahead. I mean, he could have his whole team paid on the payroll. That's great. I mean, that's fine. And I guess you could do the out clause if you wanted it. But are those the things that are really meaningful? Like, I guess those are extras, but I think everyone would add on those extras. Mm-hmm. You know, you hear about winning the whole time. I just, like, can you convince Shohei Ohtani, if you're the Blue Jays, that we're prepared to win? I don't know if you can do that right now. And if that is the most important thing, that's the end of conversation. Is it not?
Yes.
Anything that's extra, sure, you'd want to give Shohei Ohtani that. I just don't know if the Blue Jays can give him the main thing, which is the opportunity to win.
Our wonderful producer, Mike Gentile, just put in the dictionary definitions. A dark horse is someone who is expected to not win, but a sleeper is just a person who wins unexpectedly, but had no one previously expected it to not win.
So you want to be the sleeper then?
Damn it.
And Ben writes dark horse.
Damn it. Why'd you have to give us that? I thought we were like on the cusp of a dark horse coming out of nowhere.
Dark horse sounds cooler.
It does.
Blue Jays can cling to that. We were a dark horse in all this.
True. But you're always the bridesmaids, never the bride, right? Like, that's kind of the vibe. Anyway, get creative. If you're recruiting Ohtani, we should have this maybe tomorrow for the text line. You get those three things that Ben Nicholson-Smith lays out, but is there something Toronto-related that we could really, you know, free pass forever to the CN Tower, the Toronto Zoo? Let him go ride to the ferry to the Toronto Island whenever he wants. Like, there's got to be something.
Yeah. Give him the island.
Can he have the island? Ohtani Island. that's it.
The best
Rename
idea we've had
it.
So far.
Ohtani Island.
Ohtani Island gets it done.
And he could live there. It's beautiful. I love the island. Beautiful skyline. Like, there's nothing in the way. That's it.
We might anger some residents who do live on the island, but
they'd be honored to share it with Ohtani.
They might be. We'll just ask them.
Ohtani Island, a TTC Presto pass that never runs out, and free rides up and down the CN Tower whenever he likes.
That'll do it.
Rogers sending the pitches to Ohtani. There's some free advice. Ohtani Island. You heard it here first on the Fan Pregame. All right. That was a fun one. Tomorrow, Tuesday night, we've got Frank Saravelli and Luke Fox from Scotiabank Arena to tee up a big one. Panthers in town tomorrow. We're going to see them tonight on Monday Night Hockey. It's a big one. The Brothers, the non-Kelsey Bowl, the Tkachuk Bowl, which is way more fun. Monday Night Hockey, Florida and Ottawa. That's a 7 p.m. followed by Vegas and Calgary at 10 o'clock. It's a fun one.
Ohtani Island. Get your tickets.
Get your tickets to Ohtani Island. Population, all Blue Jays fans. All right, we'll be back tomorrow night. Have a great night, everyone.